Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Gilbert Gottfried, and this is Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsession with Frank Santopadre. I forgot your name.
That's
already.
That's fine.
And we're once again at Nutmeg. And
with Frank Fertorosa.
Yes. And let's see if I remember these two names.
Not a chance.
Devlin.
Are you right?
Desmond. Devlin?
The switch them, right?
That's
right.
Devlin Desmond.
No, the other way.
Wait, the other one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Desmond, longtime Mad Magazine writer, Desmond Devlin.
Yeah. All right.
Desmond Devlin, longtime Mad Magazine. Now, let me see, what is his job?
He's the senior editor.
Senior editor of Mad Magazine. Okay, wait a second. Joe Raiola?
Nicely done. I'm so upset
that
you got my name right.
That's a first.
Would you please mispronounce it?
This has been Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal.
Butcher my name. I'm wanting you to butcher my name so badly.
Well, Joe and Desmond were here. Gilbert and I just recorded with the legends Dick DiBartolo and the wonderful, ageless Al Jaffe. And Desmond and Joe were nice enough to come, and in fact, Joe set up and coordinated that episode with Dick and Al, which when this airs, you won't have heard yet. But they decided to stay. Actually, we hijacked them at the elevator and said, "Come on, guys, stick around and do a little mini episode with us." And here they are to talk about.
Now, we were talking about Mad Magazine presents Up the Academy.
Yes.
Which
yes.
was a severe piece of shit, I think, the New York Times.
Really? I believe that's a direct quote.
Vincent Canby had that in the headline.
Yes.
I believe that's a direct
quote. Now, we were talking on the show that...
With Alan Dick.
Yeah.
Why are you torturing us with this? Why do you keep bringing
this
up?
You enjoy that it failed.
Which
yes.
was a miserable
we talk
failure.
About bombs on this.
Up the Academy was such a piece of shit that the star of it, Ron Liebman,
yes.
had his name removed from the credits.
But you understand.
And here you are today.
Understand that Mad Writers had nothing to do with that piece of shit.
Right.
It wasn't written by Mad Writers. Mad editors weren't involved in it.
It wasn't viewed by Mad Writers.
And they said it's looked upon, you know, if you call it Mad, then we could make it like Lampoon. You'll have a whole chain.
Yes.
I'm sure that's what they were after, because you had National Lampoon's Animal House.
So and they still seem to be coming out with National Lampoon things that show up on cable at 4
Yeah, now
in the
it's
morning.
All cable fodder.
Yeah.
And less and less
so
of
you
it.
Want to talk about what Mad's done wrong over its 60s?
Yes.
Well, that's just a continuation.
It's dark sour.
They said that Gaines... had his name and Mad removed. Oh, and that the statue, they had a statue of Alfred E. Newman. They had to cut that out of the movie.
Well, he paid $50,000 to have the statue of Alfred removed, I believe, from the DVD print of the movie.
That's
because
what
he did
a piece
not
of
want.
Shit that
yes, that's exactly yes. right. That's,
right.
That's
he also
what
I mentioned. The statue.
You
don't want the 15 people who saw this movie to know.
Yes.
Now, I will tell you... I will tell you something about Gaines.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Tell us how long you've been at Mad Magazine.
No, I've been at Mad for 32 years.
32 years.
And Bill died in 92,
bless
I think.
Your heart.
So
yes.
He died
a week after meeting me, I'd like to point out.
A week after meeting. Well, maybe those two things are related
nothing
in some way.
I
once rode on an elevator with George Gaines.
Bill Gaines.
Bill Gaines.
George Gaines was the guy from Police Academy.
George was a wonderful guy, you know. George, I love
George
his work.
George Gaines was his good-for-nothing cousin.
I loved him, you know. And his wife, Barbara Gaines.
I never met.
Oh, Barbara Baines I met. Excuse me.
George.
George
was
yeah.
was a fuck up. Totally.
George. Yeah.
I think he wrote up the Academy. George.
Oh,
no,
actually,
I was on an elevator.
He had Crohn's disease,
Bill
by the
Gaines.
Way.
And I just remember I didn't see him behind me, and I was standing on the elevator, a crowded elevator, and all I could hear was.
He had health problems.
Yeah, and I turned around, and there he was.
Oh, you're talking about George or Bill?
Now, George had already gone on vacation.
Now, I'll tell you about Bill.
Actually, if I can interject, back at EC Comics days, one of the office guys they hired wasn't too bright. And so Bill Gaines had this idea. He basically took rubber cement and made it a scar and put it on his face and pretended to be his own evil brother.
Oh, Gilbert's done
that. And he would storm into the office and start screaming at people. And he'd go through Bill Gaines' own desk and pretend to steal money from his brother.
Ingenious.
Just for the purpose of terrifying this person in the office.
That's good. I like that one. So you've been with the magazine 32 years, and you knew Bill well.
Before he died... Quite a while before he died, he said to me that he was going to haunt me in my dreams. And it's just true. He said he was going to haunt me in because we didn't get along in a lot of ways. I mean, we loved each other, but we didn't get along because very different people. You know, me being a vegetarian and Bill would eat animals while they were still walking. So I had a Gaines dream. I actually had a Gaines dream. And here's the dream. I'm standing in the doorway at my office, and Gaines... was walking down the hall, and I can't believe it's Bill. And I say, Bill, I can't believe it. You're alive. And he says to me, no, I'm not. I'm dead. And I say, but you're here. You're standing. You're walking. He said, what? You never heard of The Walking Dead? Then he walks into the office. And he's talking to another editor, and another editor sees him and says, hey, Bill, you look like you lost weight since you died. And then Gaines and I start walking around the office, and I'm showing in the office, and he stops. He grabs me by the shoulders, he turns me to him, and he says the following, and I quote, I hate to break it to you, but all this is a waste of time. You should enjoy it. It's very nice, but it's all a waste of time. And then he dies again.
Wow.
Oh.
That's profound and disturbing and terrifying.
Yes.
I'm very upset.
Don't talk for the rest of this interview.
That was, and it was exactly in his voice. All this is, you guys should take that advice to heart. All this is very nice and you should enjoy it, but it's a waste of time.
Of course.
Trust me. You've obviously
breaking news here?
You've obviously heard this podcast.
I think maybe Gaines has heard the podcast.
My entire career is a waste of time.
Now, one thing I have to say about those fold-ins, there were some fold-ins that even as a kid, I said, oh, come on, where I'd go like, how come that guy's ear looks like a car? And why does that guy's nose look like the Statue of Liberty?
Did you ever try drawing fold-in, Gilbert? Al's not here now,
he says
so you want to start criticizing the fold-in.
As a kid, I would try to do those. And, I mean, it is impossible.
Well, that's because he's an engineer at heart, that he's able to actually pull those things off.
No,
I mean,
he's brilliant.
They were based, you know, Al did not mention this in the episode.
No,
but
I didn't want to ask him about it because
actually, I think they were inspired by the Playboy centerfold.
Right.
By the, you know, Playboy would fold out. That was the whole thing.
Life magazine had the four-page spreads you would open up. And
Al Jaffe, because Playboy would fold out, he decided to make it fold in.
Part of his genius.
Wow.
Isn't that great?
He's amazing.
That was,
and nobody's done it. I mean, it's been parodied, but nobody, and I don't think anybody can do it.
The parodies are bad, mostly.
Yeah.
They, you know, you can see... They're in celebration of him when you see the bad parodies.
Absolutely.
It's truly amazing that something like that has stood the test of time. Al is like the Neil Young of cartoonists. He's always hip. You know, he never goes out of style.
No, and it's so cool that The Daily Show and Colbert and this whole other generation, this, you know, this cool generation of satirists and humorists revere him.
Yeah, well, you know,
I won't put Gilbert and I in that category.
No,
but, but and he is as hip and as au courant as ever
at 95.
At 95, and he told us before, and this again, the episode hasn't posted yet, that he did his best fold in ever recently. After what, 54 years of doing them, or 50?
Finally got it right.
51 years.
he finally got it. You know, Al gets a standing ovation when he walks into the room.
Yeah.
Because people are so happy to see him.
Well, people on social media said, you know, please get Al Jaffe for the show. And so we're glad we did.
And also the thing about the fold-in to remember is, Al, these are not computer generated.
I know.
These are not things that Al creates on the computer and emails into the office. He actually sits at the board and he illustrates them, and he goes through that process, and he brings them in a portfolio the way he would have years ago. So on that level,
he never sees the finished picture until it's printed in the magazine himself, because he does it on a hard board.
Right.
So in his head, he knows what's supposed to happen. He works it all out, but he literally doesn't see the picture any sooner than anyone else.
I've read that he tries to deceive the reader as long as he can.
Yeah.
But he tries to do a little subterfuge.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's part of the mastery of
and,
the planet.
And I asked Al to sign a magazine for me, a Mad magazine. And, you know, it was funny because his hand wasn't steady. You know, it's got like kind of a twitch in it. And it took him a while. And I said, like, how are you able to do those drawings in the back? I mean, when you have so much, and he said he just loves it so much.
And he spends a lot of time on them, too.
Yeah.
It isn't like he creates a folder in 5 minutes.
It probably takes weeks and weeks.
I don't think it takes weeks and weeks, but it takes him.
His pace of drawing has slowed down a lot. He's 95. So
yeah.
So tell us, we touched in the on the episode in the full length episode on some of the other legendary mad artists. Gilbert brought up Proheus and Aragonus, and we talked about Jack Davis and Drucker. Any specific memories or stories that you guys have? I mean, some of these guys must have illustrated your pieces over the years. You've been in the magazine
so
long.
When I first started at Mad, I was actually in high school when I actually cut class to come into the office and meet the guys and show them my stuff. And I sold something, I think I was about 18 or 19. But the first people who drew my article, the first one who drew my article was George Woodbridge, who's a great artist.
I don't think
he's quite as, you know, well known to the public as you know, Don Martin or Al Jaffe, people like that, but it was wonderful.
Yes.
Paul Coker drew a very early one of mine.
Yep.
Jack Davis, Don Martin. I was like getting just the Murderer's Row.
What a
for my
thrill
first
for a
series
kid.
It was unbelievable.
Coker did my first piece in the magazine, which was a thrill, which you helped me sell. You were very patient back in 92. You'll never remember the piece, but it was Coker, and it was such a thrill for me to get into the magazine, but also illustrated by one of the classic guys.
You see, for me, when I was a Mad reader, I guess this was somewhat unusual, it was the writers, not the illustrators.
Isn't that interesting?
Well,
I went to art school.
Because for me, it was Frank Jacobs.
Right, right.
And, you know, Jacobs specialized in writing, of course, Mad song parodies. And I remember, off we go into the lunchroom yonder, shoving girls out of the way.
Right.
Come on,
you
boys.
Know, he did all the song parodies.
That's the stuff
Mad.
I remember. Yeah. And I used to sing that stuff. And that's the stuff that drew me into Mad first.
And I remember Mad Magazine used to have like this flying machine that would pop up.
Oh, the Mad Zeppelin?
Yes.
The Zeppelin.
Yeah. And
what's
it would
the
pop
story
up on different pages.
The story is that Bill Gates loves Zeppelins.
That was it.
That's his right. And so they start drawing one of the pages.
He was
a Zeppelin freak.
I was in his office, you know, when I sold the first piece and you brought me in.
So you were in the old office.
You probably have no memory of this. The Coker piece was called Practical Joke Items for People Who Hate Pets. And Coker did it, and I came up to the office, I guess, to get a check. And you said, do you want to meet Bill? And of course I did. And I don't even think I've told Gilbert this. And I went in, and there were the Zeppelins hanging in the office.
Oh,
and
geez,
four air conditioners running, probably in the middle of February. And he pulled a bogey line on me. He said, here's to the beginning of a beautiful friendship. And
that's what he said.
I was very touched. And then you called me about 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, and you were kind of stunned. You were in a state of shock because he had just passed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was surprised, but in a way wasn't surprised. I mean, to think about Bill, I would say this. Bill was probably the unhealthiest man I've ever met in my life and the happiest. He really lived life on his own terms. And that was the thing about him that I really love so much. And it's funny, you have that memory of what he said to you?
Yeah.
I remember what he said to me.
It was a short meeting, but.
When he first hired me and my pal Charlie Cato, because we were hired at the same time, he said, John and Nick, the other, you know, John Ficarra and Nick Megel, the other editors, John and Nick tell me that you boys are very talented. I don't believe them. And then he said, I propose to pay you as little as possible.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
That stuck with me, and he was not lying. He proposed to pay me as little as possible, and he meant it. And
hilarious.
Of course, that was the whole thing about Mad being cheap and sure. All that. And Bill really was cheap, you know. Bill talk about the trips and all that. He was very generous, taking the Mad staff around the world. But he wouldn't allow people to subscribe with a credit card. He wouldn't have a bill me option. You had to pay to subscribe to Med. He wouldn't spring for spring water. He had an old fashioned fountain. He didn't want to pay for the water. I remember when he found out we had typewriters in the '80s. When he found out that I was using the electronic typewriter, non reusable typewriter ribbons, he made me spend days finding cartridges that were reusable.
That's great. There's some stuff like that in Dick's book.
So that he wouldn't have to get bills every month for typewriter ribbons.
Don't forget to follow us on our Facebook page, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast, on Twitter at RealGilbertACP. And on Instagram, Gilbert Podfried. You see, it's kind of a pun on the last name. Yeah, skip it. Also, visit our terrific new website, GilbertPodcast.com, for the latest news, episodes, synopsis, behind-the-scenes photos, and videos, and other cool stuff. And if you like the show, and you know you do, please rate and review us on iTunes. Can't you see we're starved for affection? For the love of God!
I remember a Mad magazine that started out, I don't know if it was on the cover or the front page, where they'd say there was some kind of like, far from a tropical country, these flat cockroaches.
Oh, I think they did that for a couple pages throughout the issue.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I'm not even remembering this. Explanation.
I think there's and they just sort of popping up.
Yeah, so when you turned each page, they would have these throughout the page.
And they're perfectly flat, and you couldn't remove them from the paper, but they were alive. That was the idea.
Yeah, they said
I don't remember that. That in the 70s?
I'm forgetting the article. I think it might be an Al Jaffe piece or something, but what they did was they sort of like parceled it out. So you turn the page, they talk about these cockroaches, and you turn like two pages later, there's one on the page. And then two pages after that, there's like three of them. And they start like mounting and growing. And so you feel your whole magazine is infested with cockroaches.
The strangest things you remember, guys.
Yeah. I mean, they're almost 65, they're almost 65 years of issues.
65
So
years.
It's hard, you know, to remember this stuff. And what happens invariably to me when I'm on the road, there's always someone at every show who will come up to me and say, you know, I got to tell you, I love the yearbook parody. And, you know, of course, they're talking about the National Lampoon.
Of course. They're trying. they're trying.
They're giving it their best shot. But
Sergio Aragonese has spent his whole life. People come up to him, oh, I love your work. Spy vs. Spy is great. And of course,
right,
he doesn't do Spy vs. Spy.
Right, right, right.
So,
did either of you know Mingo? Norman Mingo?
No.
Oh, my God. There's a name.
Norman Mingo died about 1980, didn't he?
Okay.
So, I would have been in high school. Norman Mingo fought in World War One. So he was.
He's
the only World War One veteran in Mad history. So
I did not realize
he was a different generation.
Well, I can cut that part out of the show.
Yep. it's like asking me if I knew Kelly Frias. Yeah.
I
think Frias is younger than Mingo.
Did you know Wally Wood?
Did I know Wally Wood?
He sold him the gun. No, Norman Mingo was retired. He was an illustrator, had his career. He was basically more or less retired, and they put this ad in Mad when Kelly Frias left. They were looking for, it was before Frias left. They wanted somebody to do a cover. And so he came in, and then he found it was Mad, and it was like, oh, like it was beneath him at that point. He was a very respected and professional artist. And somehow they got him to draw the first cover illustration of Alfred E. Newman. So that was issue number 30, believe it or not. And he, that somehow led, basically he unretired more or less from Mad exclusively.
I did not know any of this.
Here's something that I've never had a clear answer on.
Is it related to what we're talking about?
Not at all. No.
Just something that
doesn't
into
involve
your head?
George Gaines.
When was Lionel Atwill born?
Every show has a Lionel Atwill reference. I warn you.
I didn't think it was going to be related to the discussion here. I don't know why.
Where did Alfred E. Newman come from?
Oh, that's the perennial.
Yeah.
What are we going to say about this? Alfred E. Newman was named after, I used to think it was Randy Newman's son, but it's actually, I believe,
Alfred
Randy Newman's father.
Right,
Randy Newman's
the
uncle. Yeah. It was Alfred Newman.
Right.
Film composer.
That's
but,
right.
You know, the character has been traced back to various sources. It was an advertisement for a dentist in Topeka, Kansas. The What Me Worry, Painless Dentistry.
So they pulled the tooth and it didn't hurt. So go ahead. They used to run in political campaigns like, this guy voted for the opponent, the one you didn't like, that kind of thing. So this moron, don't be like him.
But really knows exactly where the idiot gap tooth character, where that idiot gap tooth kid came from.
Well, that's actually why they hired Norman Mingo, because they had were sort of these old, sort of faded, 1890, 1920 pictures of Alfred E. Newman, and they were kind of grainy and, worn out. And they wanted to make Mad a more professional looking magazine. So we need somebody to paint a good picture of this guy that we can reuse. And that was the assignment. They put an ad in the paper and Mingo.
I knew none of this. I thought I knew Mad history, and I knew none of this Mingo history.
And the thing about Alfred, of course, he's the archetypal fool. And, as Blake famously said, a fool who persists in his folly shall become wise. So there's a certain, Alfred, you can play Alfred either way. On one level, he's just an idiot, he's just a total idiot, and it can go that way. But on the other hand, there's something about Alfred that speaks to a certain wisdom.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, I think of that like in the tarot deck, the fool dances on the edge of the cliff and is about to fall off the cliff, but the dog barks to kind of warn the fool that he's in trouble. And so the fool is an intuitive character in a sense. So there is a certain something there, depending on how you play it. Yeah.
I want to give a shout-out, too, to just since we've mentioned so many artists in this episode and the other episode, one of my favorites as a kid was Bob Clark.
Oh, well, Bob Clark, yeah.
Jack Rickard,
Bob Clark was beloved in the office.
Jack Rickard? I never knew how to say it. Jack Rickard.
Yeah, those are guys who could do all
really
different
love
kinds of articles because a lot of the artists had their specialty, obviously, like Proheus did Spy vs. Spy,
yeah,
more or less exclusively with a few extra articles here and there.
I love those
And Sergio
guys.
Did, Aragonese did the margins. But, yeah, Clark and Rickard were really like the you wouldn't call them bench guys, but basically they could do a movie, they could do ads, they could do gag cartoons, and just invaluable to have when you have to put out a 48-page
They're both
magazine.
Gone, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Paul mm-hmm. Coker's still around. Paul Coker's
oh,
with
yeah.
us.
Paul is one of several guys who's been working with Mad for over half a century.
Yeah. And Paul Coker's designs were used by Rankin Bass.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1960s on Frosty the Snowman.
Yep.
Now you see, that's the kind of stuff in your brain.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff in your brain.
If you go and you look at those cartoons, you will see Paul Coker's art. You'll see Paul Coker's designs.
I wrote an article about 2 or 3 years ago about global warming, and Paul Coker drew it. And in the cartoon, in the pages, he drew Frosty the Snowman sweating to death from global warming.
Love it.
Which is his own character.
Love it.
I remember National Lampoon did a takeoff on Mad Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was snappy answers for stupid questions. And it was like stuff like, hey, is this where the bus stops? And the other guy goes, fuck you.
Actually, the most infamous spoof of Mad.
Yeah.
Not many people know this.
Okay.
Was done by Al Goldstein in Screw.
Oh, yes. I did know it.
Al Goldstein. You
He's
love the
come
idea
up on this show.
Goldstein did an actually filthy spoof of Mad, filthy with Alfred E. Newman in fellatio and I don't remember all of it, but it was completely graphic and tasteless with that you know very low quality screw photoshopping.
Yes.
Now understand this, that Goldstein and Gaines,
they were buddies.
They were friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were friends. So, but here's Goldstein using these copyrighted characters. He does stuff with the lighter side. You know, filthy. Just completely filthy. So Gaines has to cover his ass. So Bill writes Al a letter that says, "Dear Mr. Goldstein, as the publisher of Mad Magazine, I am absolutely outraged that you are doing this. And furthermore, I demand that you remove your newspapers from the newsstands by such and such a date, or you will be sued." And the Screw was a weekly, and Gaines gave him a date by which he knew that the issue would be off the stands.
That's great. That's a great story. And
I also remember there was like one phony ad that had Bill Gaines in it. As long
more than
as,
Bill, oh, appeared yeah, more yeah, than one.
But there was that one with it was like that kind
the,
of
the Belgian sit. The Belgian belly buster.
Yes, yes, yes.
The Belgian belly
it was
buster.
Bill and who are the others?
That's Al Goldstein.
Al Goldstein. I thought
and
so.
Lonnie Bretta, right?
Lyle Stewart.
Lyle Stewart. Okay.
Yeah, because I remember thinking, you know, like when we were talking about Al Goldstein, I thought. I remember them both in that ad.
You're reminding me of something. Someone convinced, I guess maybe Bill's wife, Annie, at the time, they convinced Bill to go to a fat farm. It's true. He was going to a Pritikin place to go on a diet for a week. And when he went there, he had people mail salami to him. To break the rules while he was there, he actually smuggled luncheon meat into the Pritikin program, which was just that was Gaines.
Is good stuff.
That was yeah. You know,
well, all the bad guys would do these silly photos. Anytime they need a photo of someone, it's somebody who writes or draws or edits the magazine all the time. So like you had Bill Gaines and his other like old obese friends just take their shirts off and look ridiculous in the picture. They called me in for one once. They were doing a catalog of various courses or something. And they said, come in and you have to wear a suit because you're like a successful businessman in this photo. I said, okay, so I'll show up on Wednesday with, you know, dress nicely. I said, okay, fine. So I show up there. I said, oh, okay, we switched some things around because you're not a businessman anymore. You're going to be a psychotic dwarf. I said, okay.
Well, Joe, you've been appearing in the magazine forever. You've been you do the guy with the shirt, the pants pulled up, and the suspenders. Who is that? Does that character have a name?
You're going back now, decades.
Well, but you've appeared a lot.
I appeared as a wrestling
right.
spoof. I was called Harold the Killer Accountant.
Right, but you've appeared more than once.
I've appeared a bunch of times in the magazine.
Dressed as a giant lobster.
You're a lobster.
In a wedding dress.
That's for the wedding dress is famous.
My favorite is as a nun playing basketball with an inflatable penguin. that's probably my favorite. We can't afford models.
Right.
You know, we can't afford
that's
models.
That's why when I write a piece, it's for Photoshop.
That's what yeah, you
it's
do.
It's easier.
You know, and listen, you know, your great piece in the magazine, which has been reprised recently,
Thank
is
you.
The banana.
You're-
the Banana Republican
piece. You're too kind.
Oh, you have to be kind. I wrote something similar once at one point, and they wrote back to me and said, look at Frank's article and like try to like make it in that vein. That's absolutely serious.
You flatter and embarrass me at the same time, boys. Yes, I was proud of the way that
What was the connection or opinion of Mad TV?
We like Mad TV.
Yeah?
We like Mad TV. I mean, it was very successful. It ran, it's coming back, you know.
Is that true?
Carol Liefer just posted yesterday that she's going to be one of the writers on it.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's coming. I think it's coming back for 8 episodes or 11 episodes.
We had Carol on here.
It ran for a long time. It ran for 11 years or 13 years. And it really didn't reflect the magazine, I would say, all that well. It was a different style of humor. The Mad cartoon show on the Cartoon Network really had more of the magazine sensibilities than Mad TV did, but I think Mad TV was really good for Mad, introduced us to a whole new audience. So I liked it.
I liked it too. Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't the magazine.
No,
but it was.
It's Quincy
it was
Jones.
Like a Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, but it didn't embarrass the magazine in any way.
No,
unlike Up the Academy.
To bring it full circle.
Lest we forget.
I said Rod Lieben did something to take his name off that movie?
I was asking Des through the glass before. I think it was Robert Downey Sr.
I think it was.
I mean, the guy made two terrific
I couldn't
satires.
Communicate my... I believe that's true, but I'm not sure.
I'm
through
pretty
the glass.
Sure it's true.
The other thing I will say...
Director of Putney Swope.
That I know is true.
Yeah. Mad TV came out of the West Coast.
Right.
I think of the magazines as having really New York sensibilities.
Of course.
It really has New York sensibilities. So,
and it terrified me when I thought you guys were going to leave. And
terrified you?
Yeah.
He's employed there.
You're employed there. I'm glad you stuck around. You want to throw in any plugs, any Mad plugs or any personal plugs? You've got a radio show.
Oh, it's out of WDST out of Woodstock on Sunday mornings. I mean,
it's a good. Gilbert and I have been on the show.
You guys have
been
on.
We do
a good show called the Woodstock Roundtable.
Okay.
Every Sunday morning on WDST.com. But more importantly, you can subscribe to Mad and go to madmag.com and you can subscribe to Mad or get the digital version of Mad. And we're also. We have now available on Zazzle our Trump poster, "Make America Dumb Again."
I love it.
With Alfred E. Newman on a spring popping out of Trump's head. Trump's been very good for Mad and for comedy in general.
Yeah, it's the old question: what do you do when life becomes weirder and darker and sillier than anything you can actually satirize? With him, it's arrived.
There's an issue in the article in the new issue that I wrote, basically taking Bible quotes and Trump quotes and putting them side by side, since Trump said the Bible's his favorite book. So sort of putting his own quotes to the test, and I don't want to spoil the surprise.
Right.
But
it's a double-edged sword. It's kind of how do you top the ridiculousness of this guy, and at the same time, he's kind of a gift.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Well, it's true of a lot of people. It was true of Ted Cruz, and it's true of Bush. You know.
Des, you have anything to plug?
I believe Up the Academy is out on DVD.
you doing a commentary?
You know, I heard that was so bad that Mad actually paid to take Alfred
somewhere between $10,000 and $50,000.
In fact, I don't know if I've said this. Ron Liebman got his name taken off it. I don't know if I mentioned it.
And I want to shout out, since you brought all those writers up, all the great Mad writers that we grew up on, and some of them are gone, but Larry Siegel and Stan Hart and Dick DeBartolo, who we had here, and Frank Jacobs. And am I leaving anybody out?
Arnie Kogan,
who's still around, and we should get Arnie
still
for the
writes
podcast.
For Mad from time to time.
Arnie Kogan still around. Who am I leaving out? I said Larry Siegel.
Let's see. Lou Silverstone was...
Lou Silverstone, sure. These guys deserve a mention.
And they just got one.
And more than that. And it's strange. I grooved to the artists. I wasn't a comedy writer then. I was going to be an illustrator. So I was into Bob Clark, and I was into Ricard and Woodbridge.
Yeah, I couldn't have named who those guys were at the time.
I wrote an article maybe 20 years ago. I'm trying to think. Basically, the premise was taking adult-themed movies and turning them to Disney movies. So it was like Pulp Fiction if Disney did it, and like the John Wayne Bobbitt porn film if Disney did it. And so I handed, and basically I wrote the whole thing, and there's Disney song parodies in the middle of it. And they called me and said, "This is, we like the article. Would you mind if we gave it to Frank Jacobs to take a look at it?" I was like, "No, I wouldn't mind that at all, because Frank Jacobs is the master of that stuff." And basically, he just went over it and like added a few things, and so it ended up being like a co-credit. Like I was with, by me with, you know, additional material from him, and it was like a class in comedy writing, because I took a look at the thing and
that's great.
And I'm looking, saw my song, what I wrote, and said, "Oh, look here, he completely threw my thing out and wrote this, and it's much better." And then some of them, he said he left mine alone. I was like, "Oh my god, he liked it." And then some of them were like half and half. He took like what I wrote, and there's added lines here and there, and of course every one of his lines improved it.
He's a he's still a master.
Like the John Wayne Bobbitt one. One of the ones I wrote was a parody of Zippity Doodah, the song. So it was like when he's getting his penis cut off, it's like Snippity Ooh-ah. So it's like Snippity Ooh-ah, Snippity A. And then Frank's the one who writes I, not to mention Oy Vey.
That's great.
And that's Frank Jacobs, why he's ahead above everyone else.
And I remember the same Jacobs song you did. Isn't that strange?
Yeah, there were a whole bunch of them. Yeah. You know, Weird Al cites, cites Frank.
Yeah, we had Weird Al on the show, and we talked a little about that.
You know, big mad fan.
These guys are influences, you know, and they deserve a mention.
I don't know if
you
should try this without preparation. At a Christmas party, Joe and I once sang a Frank Jacobs song, the Christmas song, Sticking Out Their Greedy Little Hands. Do you remember this at all?
Doorbells ring.
Yep. That's
you guys want to hear a Frank Jacobs Christmas song?
Not really.
Thank you.
Listen. I mentioned it.
It was not my idea.
He starts singing it.
Give us a couple
of
bars. You remember it?
Sure, I remember it.
Go quick.
Doorbells ring, it's the season, and you know what's the reason. There's someone out there who's after his share, sticking out his greedy little hand.
First to come is the doorman.
He'll complain, he's a poor man. The janitor's next on some weak pretext, sticking out his greedy little hand.
I like it.
Ah! Okay. I guess if that's not a cue to wrap up the show,
not a cue to wrap the show 4 minutes ago.
Jacobs is still a genius.
Yeah, I'm a very talented person, really. Yes. I'm sorry I got talked into that.
Do you want to plug any of the Lennon shows or any of that stuff?
Well, given that the next... You know what? We have a Bob Dylan...
plug it, brother.
Positively Bob Dylan, Volume 2.
Right.
I'm producing... Okay. That's at City Winery here in New York on August 3rd.
Okay.
And tickets are available at citywinery.com.
Definitely be up before August 3rd.
That'll be a great show with Anais Mitchell and Steve Forbert and Nellie MacKay. And
okay.
Get tickets and come. It'll be great.
Fantastic.
Okay, so from Mad Magazine, we've been talking to Joe Ravioli and Desmond Tutu.
Well, those are like mad names.
Yeah.
That's in the spirit of the magazine, wouldn't you say?
Thank you, Gilbert Gottlieb. You know?
Thank you, guys. Thanks for sticking around.
This has been Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsession.
Sessions.